AARP Indiana, committed to amplifying the voice of Hoosiers 50-plus at the Indiana State House on issues like the Hoosier Employee Retirement Options Bill. More at action.aarp.org/inhero.
The state of the state. Did the governor sidestep the civil rights issue? John Gregg stages a contrast to the governor, and the House Speaker pursues a pair of tax hikes. That plus the Powerball frenzy and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 15, 2016.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Governor Mike Pence delivered his fourth State of the State address. In it, he spelled out his criteria for legislation that would balance religious freedoms with civil rights for the LGBT community. He came down solidly on the side of religious freedom.
Now, the question before you, as the elected representatives of the people of Indiana, is whether it is necessary or even possible to reconcile these two values in the law without compromising the freedoms we hold dear. Let's remember, we're a state with a constitution.
Does the governor want the civil rights debate to end? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel, Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, did the governor provide meaningful guidance?
No. The governor's quite pleased with the situation the way it is. It's apparent. This reinforces where he's been his entire time in an elected office. He offered a constitutional amendment to the federal constitution to take away marriage equality, and he supported one in the state. He is happy with the situation the way it is. Now, he's not happy with all the press because he knows he's on the wrong side of progress on this issue, but he's not doing what he needs to do. If he wants the issue to go away, it was four words and a comma. That's all he had to do, and he not only didn't do that, he held up this shibboleth of religious freedom as a reason to discriminate. So he's going to lose in this debate, and it's going to affect his gubernatorial candidacy, that's for sure.
Well, what he did was he told the legislature that if you folks want to find a compromise on this, go ahead.
Right? Yes, which is what we thought he would do. He's done that on a number of major issues. But in this case,
is that leadership?
Well, you know, here's the deal. Mike Pence is a very serious guy. I've known him for a long time. And I've looked at the Indiana Constitution about a half dozen times in the last year because I knew that's where this problem, in trying to sort out this problem, where it would be sorted out. And clearly, the first article, Section 1, says all people are created equal. Article 3 says, that basically I'm paraphrasing badly here, but it says that you can't have any law, regardless whatsoever, that's going to discriminate against your religious beliefs or infringe on your freedom of conscience. And that's the hang-up right now on where he is. I think he takes his oath seriously when he swore that he would support the Constitution of the United States, the Constitution of the State of Indiana. I think that's where it is. Honestly, I think that's honestly where he is. And I think that he said, look, if you can figure out a way to balance these, and that's why I think the line was in there where he said, I'm not sure you can based on
right.
The way this
is. Right. I mean, he suggested that it's not
written,
necessary to do anything.
Although I do think that there is an effort being made to do that. I think Senator Holdman and the Senate in particular right now are really going out of their way to try to find a solution to this. But that's where he was.
House Speaker, meantime, said it's going to be more difficult after
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that made it any more difficult or more possible. based on what he said, but I don't think it changed where the legislators
are.
You know,
but you have 170. Go ahead.
But I'm just saying that I think that's what this is, the root of this is, because I think Mike Pence has always been a strict constructionist, and I think that's the way he sees the world.
He tried to amend the Constitution to reinforce the discrimination. I'm sure that's where he is now.
Yeah.
After 175 days of study, he is exactly where he was at the beginning of this, which is in the 17th century.
And I think he has struggled with that every single day.
He is consistent.
Oh, yeah. Consistently discriminating.
This is a message that the conservative base wanted to hear.
I think they did want to hear this. Now, they probably, well, I don't want to say go too far, but they probably could have dispensed with some of the other comments he made on the subject where he was trying to strike a balance where he was saying that, you know, we don't discriminate, we don't do this, we don't do this. They might have sort of been humming to themselves or had their fingers over their ears at that point until you get to the part they want to hear. But the challenge of being a strict constructionist and just trying to say that these are evident, every word in the Constitution, everything's open to interpretation. Article 1, Section 6 says no money from the state treasury should go to any institution that's theological or religious in nature.
And we got beyond that with vouchers.
And that went to the courts, and that was how you have private school vouchers.
So it isn't about strict construction.
So
it's about a shibboleth.
Well, I think it is.
I'm just saying.
And I respect that.
Just as that was open to interpretation, you could probably say that other people.
I agree with that.
Tell me this, John Ketzenberger. He spent almost the entire speech prior to this talking about things that he's done, things that I think he'd like to be campaign issues in the fall, yet all of the coverage was about this issue. Was that a strategic mistake?
No, he couldn't avoid it. Okay, if he'd put that in the front of the speech, the middle of the speech, the end of the speech, the only way to avoid it, even if he hadn't said it in the speech, it would have been the major news. So that's just the reality that the governor has to face, and that's part of the problem that he's got. He has some things, HIP 2.0, that he could talk about. He's got some new things with education and transportation funding that he could talk about. But all of the oxygen is being consumed by this issue, and I don't think he helped himself in that regard by not coming out straightforward on his position, because now it's left to interpretation. Now we're all kind of wondering, and it's up to the legislature. I will be interested to see if the legislature sends him a bill, and second, what he'll do with it when it gets there.
From a very pragmatic standpoint, and based on the fact of I get a feel for who watches the State of the State speech, I think you're smart to put your accomplishments up front while people are still paying attention until you get down to the last couple of minutes of the speech, because John's exactly right. It would have made a difference where he said that. He would have been criticized for it. He has a lot to be proud of. He has a lot of accomplishments he can and tout and did and should have. And that's what he did, and that's what you're going to see in his campaign.
His biggest accomplishment is the expansion of Obamacare. There's no question about that. But John's right. His failure to lead on this issue, which is what this is, his willingness to tolerate discrimination in the name of freedom of religion, even though that's not what religion is all about, is going to dominate this campaign for the next 10 months.
Moving on. If the governor's position was predictable, so were the reactions to it. Afterward, Democrats went on the attack, and Republicans defended the governor. Supporters of new civil rights for the LGBT community complained of what they called a lack of leadership. Here is Minority Leader Scott Pilath, followed by House Speaker Brian Bosma.
The chief executive that caused this conflagration in the first place completely washed his hands of the entire issue, punted it to the legislature.
I thought he was more clear on the religious freedom issue, the element that he is most concerned about, than I've heard him say before.
He stopped short of saying that they shouldn't be fired from their jobs, or that they shouldn't lose access to their housing, or that they shouldn't be denied access to public places. That's what this debate is all about.
And that's Peter Hanscom, a spokesman for Indiana Competes, a business coalition in support of new civil rights laws, talking about the LGBT community. Mike McDaniel, is that what the governor anticipated, the reaction?
Oh, I think he knew what the reactions were going to be. Look, when you take the approach that he's taken, I've said for months that he does that because of his experience in the legislature, to give legislative parameters, tell him to go deal with it. And you think about the way they've dealt with things over the last 3 years. He's done just that, and they've come out with results that have been very positive for him. Okay, and so but on something like this, this is different than throwing out numbers of, say, parameters for a highway program or something like that. And on social issues like this, you know you're going to open yourself up to the criticism of lack of leadership. But I can tell you, I could have written the responses for everybody that responded 8 months ago.
Yeah.
You didn't have to wait till last night to know what Scott Pilaf was going to say, or anybody else that was quoted.
Pilaf said at one point that he thought that the governor is in an alternate universe, that he lives in Bizarro, Indiana. But I thought that maybe the Republican response was more interesting in some ways. They said he's never been this clear on religious freedoms before.
We had to say, I mean, Brian Bosma had to say something. I mean, he was put in a terrible position. He's left with absolutely no guidance on this in a free fall in his caucus where they can't agree on anything on this. And then you've got Mike Pence up there saying, I want religious freedom. Well, everybody wants religious freedom, and that's why it's enshrined in the Constitution. What we don't want is the ability to fire somebody simply because of their sexual orientation or the right to refuse them in a multi-story apartment building a place to rent or otherwise discriminate against them when they walk into the grocery store. Those are things that are so basic and so much a part of our community that Mike Pence should have just stood up there and said, we don't want that in Indiana. We don't want that kind of discrimination. That would have helped Brian Bosma. You would have had a better response from him as a result.
Where does this go from here?
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the Senate handles this. The Holdman bill, one of the two Holdman bills, are likely to be given some serious consideration. You've got a couple other options, the Young bill in the Senate. So that's where the action's going to be, and it'll be interesting to see because it's very far from four words and a comma right now. They're trying to find a solution that may not be possible in legislation. So it'll be interesting to see.
It's not going
to
be possible if we allow Mike Young to rewrite the federal civil rights code. I can tell you that.
I'm like Ejim. I thought that the reactions were as interesting or more interesting perhaps than the text of the speech, because you had even Republicans, if you look at the text of the comments afterward, disagreeing dramatically about the thrust of the speech. Some said, well, at least, you know, there was no veto threat here. It was he's going to look at everything and consider everything. And other people saying, well, he made clear that he would veto this legislation. Yeah. And I know there are parameters, but it reminded me a little bit of the debate over expansion of gambling with live dealers and land-based casinos. And he said, well, I'm going to be clear, we will not have an expansion of gambling. And then that left us and everybody else and the 150 people in the General Assembly to say, well, what do you mean by expansion of gambling?
Yeah, so this he vetoed a bill as a result of it.
Right, but I mean the notion is you have to sort of read between the lines
that's
to say what's an expansion.
To lead. He doesn't want to take a position.
All right.
That's what it comes
but
down
maybe
to.
Still with this. The night after the State of the State, Democratic candidate for governor John Gregg met with LGBT voters. Gregg accepted an invitation from the Stonewall Democrats to speak at a downtown bar. He said the governor's State of the State address showed a lack of leadership. He drew this contrast.
We talk a lot about common sense, competence, and inclusion. And inclusion means not just the LGBT community, but also means including teachers in education reform.
John Ketzenberger, what does that contrast do for Gregg?
I think that contrast gives him an opening and a place to run. You know, he's clearly evolving, if you will, on this issue, and he had to if he wants to win the support.
Well, and he's sending the message that he's evolved, because
that's right.
For those who don't remember, in 2012, it was his position that marriage is between a man and a woman. Barack Obama had that position, changed it during the campaign.
Right.
John Gregg did not.
And so, you know, he's better late than never for a lot of people,
right.
But he's still got people to win over, and he needs to continue to make that evolution if he wants to be competitive.
He'll do that. He'll do that because his position on that has evolved, as most of the citizens of Indiana have over the last 10 years. Many of us have been involved in politics for 20 or 30 years, and we've never seen the public opinion on this issue evolve as quickly as it has.
On any issue.
On any issue. On any issue. That's right.
All right, moving on now. The House GOP role plan calls for a $1 a pack hike in the cigarette tax and a 4 cent per gallon hike in the gasoline tax. It was the subject of a lengthy public hearing in an Indiana House committee this week. The idea is to create a sustainable source for road funding, and sponsors are trying to sell the plan as user fees as opposed to tax increases. They point out that the gas tax was last increased in 2002. The cigarette tax money would go to pay Medicaid expenses created by tobacco-related illnesses, and that would free up $300 million in road money, the biggest part of the $500 million plan. Here's the bill author, Ed Soliday, followed by Tim McKinney of the National Association of Tobacco Outlets.
Those who have chosen to smoke should pay their fair share of the costs they generate.
On the face of it, that proposed tax increase we think is excessive and unfair, certainly to Indiana tobacco retailers and their adult customers.
This is an important bill, and in our part of the state, there is nothing more important than improving the transportation network.
And that's South Bend businessman John Fair. John Schwanis, the governor said no new taxes in the State of the State address. Is anybody listening?
Well, Woody, I think he said, Jim, and I guess we can debate what he meant by this, too. He said the last place he would look for funding for these projects would be the pockets or wallets. I forget the exact word.
Wallets and pocketbooks of Hoosiers. Yes. And then he said we can do road funding without
clearly, new taxes. Yeah, I'm being somewhat facetious. But clearly his message was he didn't want to see it with taxes. And that's interesting because it does put his position at odds with certainly what Ed Soliday
Brian Bosma
and Brian Bosma,
sitting right
who's
behind
the
him.
Chairman of the Republican House caucus. And, I mean, it's interesting. I guess I'll give credit to any politician of any stripe that is willing to put options on the table. I mean, the forget Social Security, the third rail of politics, it seems anymore, is anything with the T word, taxes. And there's a willingness this session, perhaps, that I haven't seen in the past to this degree on the part of the Republican House caucus to entertain, call it what you will, fee increase, user fees, revenue enhancements, but at least it's on the table, and I think that's adult politics to look at the real world that expenses go up and probably taxes should as well.
Byron Bosma argues that he's taken part in 20 tax cuts, so his record is secure, and that they're trying to call this indexing, that is saying that you're paying less now in gas tax than you have been at any time since 2002, and they're restoring the 2002 level.
It happens to be true, but the problem is that's a very hard sell. And so I think there's no question you're going to have additional revenue because the buying power, if you will, of the state for roads has eroded since 2002 when the last increase was. You know, the money that's available to the state for road projects is less practically. There are more projects necessary. You've got maintenance needs in local roads only of $3 billion to catch up. So I think that what he's doing practically here is kind of softening up the ground, if you will, so that when they come back next year in a budget writing year, they will have all of these options available and they can make a comprehensive look.
Democrats are saying there's no need for a tax increase.
Well, I actually think there is the need for a tax increase. I think Brian Bosma's got the right idea on the gas tax. I'm not sure about the dollar on the cigarette tax and freeing up the money. I think it ought to be related to roads. And it's not simply that we haven't had an increase since 2002. The mileage, our gas mileage, has increased dramatically since then with all the federal standards.
And it's going to hit, the case he makes is that it's going to increase even more. And by the time we get to 2021,
it's going to be too late to have enough money to do what we need to do to keep the crossroads of America functioning. So he's right, and it is an adult position to come in and do it. The governor's Band-Aid is what it is not sufficient. It isn't long-term funding, and you need to have an adult leadership approach, which obviously Mike Pence isn't willing to provide.
The short-term fix is certainly the attractive one and the politically feasible one with an election year.
I think that's right. Somebody made the point this week, if they didn't do the income tax cut that Mike Pence asked for in his first term in office, there wouldn't be a need for a tax increase.
Stayed the corporate tax cut.
There are as many opinions about how to do this as there are members of the legislature right now. I learned a long time ago when it comes to fiscal matters, when a major proposal like this is offered of any kind, regardless of which one you pay attention to, listen to the responses from the fiscal leadership in both houses to see what their first reaction is. And when these proposals came out, the reaction in the Senate fiscal leadership was, but this is the kind of thing that needs to be fixed long-term in a long session budget year. And John's exactly right. That's what you're going to have happen. You're going to see a short-term fix for this for now, and then you're going to see a long-term solution next year. And I think Brian Bosma will be close to where we end up next year in this thing. But I listened very carefully to what the Senate fiscal leadership said, and it sounds to me like the Senate is not ready to deal with a long-term fix this year. And so we'll have some, and the Democrats are all over a lot, too. Pilaf's against a tax increase.
But he's four more road money, and he's four more spending part of the surplus.
But Mayor Buttigieg of South Bend says he supports the Republican plan for roads.
And if you stop,
so, I mean, they're all over the place, so as the Republicans are. So it isn't going to happen in long term this year, but it will next year.
But if you stay the corporate tax break cuts that are coming in, you could fund this entire thing.
Well, then if you want to ruin our business plan.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of numbers. You're already doing very well.
Numbers being thrown around.
The only numbers I think that matter is you have 8 months until the next election by the time the session's over, or 2 years until the 2 years. They're going to opt for the 2 years over the 8 months.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, would you support a hike in the gas tax? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should I-STEP be scrapped? 15% said rework it, 2% said rename it, 83% said scrap it. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to WFYI.org/IWIR and look for the poll. State's School Superintendent Glenda Ritz spelled out her legislative agenda this week. It contains just three items, and two of them are related to the I-STEP test. The top priority for the Democrat is the bill that is already moving in the General Assembly. It calls for a pause in accountability measures tied to I-STEP. Under it, I-STEP will no longer have a bearing on school grades or teacher raises for 1 year. Ritz also called for creating a new test. She said that I-STEP doesn't help teachers.
They know their subject matter, and they know their students. They can tell you who's not going to pass that I-STEP before they ever hand it out. It's a pass-fail exam. It doesn't inform instruction.
Mike McDaniel, is that a foolproof of it, agenda?
Well, I mean, the bill is just about to land on the governor's desk that she came out this week and supported, so I think that was pretty safe bet that she was going to get her wish on that one. So, I think there's a lot of agreement in the General Assembly that we ought to do something other than I-STEP moving forward.
Right.
I think people are fed up with the problems that they've had with the test and the way it's been handled. And I think there's a lot of momentum heading that direction. But she is also asking for some expansion of K-12 right now. And, again, that won't happen in a short session. That's going to happen in a budget year. And she ought to know that. But she's asking for it now because she's running for re-election.
Well, the timing and the size of this suggests it was an election year agenda, doesn't it?
Well, she's been talking about this for over a year, okay? And remember, it was Mike Pence.
She has.
Mike Pence who said to the teachers, it's not personal, but suck it up and take the I-STEP. He's the one who's changed his position in the election year. She's been saying this all along.
See, he is flexible.
Only as far as his own election is concerned. It is not the kind of test you need to evaluate and promote the students. She said that for some period of time. And finally, Brian Bosma and I think Senator Long are listening to her, even though the governor's being dragged along kicking and screaming. So it's a good thing, all in all.
She's going to have a pretty good scorecard at the end of the session, though.
Well, I think it was almost Edmund Baez. Attaching yourself to something that's going to happen anyway.
She had asked for it before it was even introduced, Mike.
John.
Okay, and she's the one that's
not
been
that
saying
remember
that
things.
The Board of Education and Mike Pence are the ones who screwed up, and the florists are the ones who screwed up I-STEP. Yeah,
John.
It's not a loaded question at all, is it? I do think that Glenda Ritz will come out of this with a strong agenda to run on. And she, she might as well ask for the moon now because, she's gotten a couple of the things that she's been pushing for. Why not ask while you can? Maybe they're in a giving mood.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at all of the caucus agenda, I heard she's not a caucus, but if you look at all of the stated agendas, whoever described it as an election year agenda, it's probably pretty much dead on.
So you agree that Mike Pence signed on because he's an election year?
Oh, I think that's right.
Okay.
I don't think there's any question.
All right, good.
Finally, this was the week for Powerball mania. This convenience store sold 25,000 tickets alone as the jackpot grew to a record $1.6 billion. No one in Indiana purchased any of the three winning tickets, but that didn't prevent a lot of dreams from taking place before the drawing.
I bought myself a nice house, another nice car, a Mercedes, and go on trips. when I'm not working, because I'm planning on still working.
And Delaney, is that healthy?
Oh, for $2 or $4, the object. I mean, be able to dream what that could do for your life. What's the harm in that? I hope he didn't mortgage the home in order to buy the tickets. And I'm kind of sorry Mike and I didn't win, actually.
There was $1 million ticket sold in Indiana and some $100,000 tickets.
But they were not in Indianapolis.
I was going to resell my driveway if I won.
Is that right?
You know what?
That's a dream.
I think really drove this? People looked and saw that Glenda Ritz and Mike Pence were in agreement on an issue, and they said the plan, it's the sign of the apocalypse. Yeah. We better go and buy our tickets now.
One of the big winners is state government.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because of the revenue. Sure, taxes off of that.
Yeah. Do we know how much?
We don't at this point. I don't believe how much comes to the state of Indiana.
Depends on the sales. It'll take them a while.
But I think it's also there are people who were buying tickets last week who are going to buy tickets this week who maybe wouldn't otherwise. I think there's a lag effect as well.
Okay.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.